Maine's faith community responds to life during a pandemic. This is Holy Week for the Christian faithful, culminating in Easter on Sunday. In normal times, churches throughout Maine would be packed with families who have traveled great distances to be together for Easter egg hunts and a big meal. But these aren't normal times, and most Easter services are going online. Passover begins tomorrow for Jewish families. This year, Seder dinners certainly will not be the usual large gatherings of family and friends. And for Muslims, Ramadan begins later this month. The Friday prayers, usually shoulder to shoulder in a mosque, will be at home. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the response of Maine's religious community in the face of COVID-19, and we'll discuss how different faith traditions are providing hope to their congregants. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It is a challenging time for all right now, including for faith communities. Major religious holidays coming up include Passover, Easter, Ramadan, all of which will be marked in very different ways this year. Today, we'll talk with faith leaders about how people are adapting to the COVID-19 pandemic and what role religion plays in times like this. Joining me, Rabbi Rachel Isaacs, who is Executive Director of the Center for Small Town Jewish Life, and she teaches Jewish Studies at Colby College. Reverend Alyssa Lodwick is designated term pastor for Woodford's Congregational Church in Portland, and she is president of the Maine Council of Churches. And Dr. Hassan Abolish is a physician based in Holton, and he is a board member of the Islamic Center of Maine in Orono. Welcome, all of you, to Maine Calling.
Thank you so much.
As always, we want to hear from you in the audience. Are you practicing your faith differently these days? Have you found religion to be helpful to you during this difficult time? Share your stories and questions by email, a brief email, please, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to start with you, Reverend Lodwick, and ask you, you know, we're in the middle of Holy Week here. Last Sunday was Palm Sunday. Easter is next Sunday. Tell me, why don't I back up a little bit? Talk about the significance of Palm Sunday. Tell me what it would usually look like at your church and what it looked like last Sunday.
So in the narrative of Christianity, Palm Sunday commemorates the day that Jesus went into Jerusalem to enter Jerusalem. It's the Passover season, Passover pilgrimage. And as he enters Jerusalem, he goes in on the back of a donkey, and he is surrounded by people. A crowd gathers, and they are crying, "Hosanna, save us!" They have palm leaves that they're laying down on the ground before him, almost giving the entrance that a military leader or a king might have. So normally on a Palm Sunday in a lot of churches, you would have a replication of that. You would have palms in the church. People might be waving them. You might process around the church building and shout Hosanna. So you're basically reenacting this entry of Jesus into Jerusalem as he goes into the last week of his life and towards arrest and trial and crucifixion.
What did last Sunday look like at Woodford's?
Well, we had an order of palms come in. We had ordered them before COVID-19, and unfortunately, we did not get to use them. So, like many Christian congregations and other faith communities across the state, we have ceased and suspended in-person worship services. So, what we did on Palm Sunday instead is people went outside into their backyards or into they took natural objects like bench. Some people had phones, and they took pictures of themselves, imitating what they would be doing if they had had a palm, but they were doing it from their backyard. So we actually had a really fun slideshow of people doing Palm Sunday from their homes. And then we also, on Zoom, this is where we're holding a lot of worship services these days, is on the platform where we all can gather at the same time and see each other on the computer screen. It isn't quite the same as together in person at all, but it does allow us to see each other, hear each other, communicate with one another. So it was quite different.
I want to turn to you, Rabbi Isaacs. Passover starts tomorrow. Tell us all a little bit about its significance and what would be happening in Jewish homes all over Maine tomorrow if these were regular times.
Sure. So in addition to my role at Colby, I'm the rabbi at Beth Israel Congregation in Waterville. We have about 70 families that are members and have been the home for Jewish life in Waterville since 1902. So traditionally, there are two Passover Seders, and for the past few years, the first Seder for Waterville families, that sometimes they'll join with Colby Hillel up on campus, or they'll have family Seders. Unlike a lot of other holidays, let's say Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, our high holidays, Passover is a home-based holiday. So usually people would be eating at home. And then usually for second Seder, we would have close to 100 people packed into the basement of our synagogue for a community Seder. And at least in our little neck of the woods, the line between family and congregation is pretty permeable. And so it's less a family Seder and then a congregational Seder as much as one part of family and another part of family. So normally Passover is a joyous time when we all get together and eat special foods, and we have a crew of synagogue members that would create a huge Seder meal with special foods just for Passover, and especially cleaned and prepared kitchen for Passover with foods brought up from New York and from Boston. And this year, all of the Colby students are gone, and we can't gather at the synagogue. So this morning, Passover boxes were left on the porch of our synagogue for families to pick up with all of the traditional elements of the Seder plate, including a shank bone, horseradish, and boxes of matzah. So we had the foresight when this broke out to order our supplies online so that families in Waterville could have access to what they need. But this is ultimately a festival about freedom, about going from Mitzrayim, which means Egypt or the narrow place, into freedom, into the desert. And it's going to be interesting as we sing songs about freedom in open spaces as we are all confined in our homes. And we're just all really thankful that through Zoom and Facebook Live, we can at least all see each other and get the sounds and the sights at least somewhat of this communal experience.
Dr. Avilesh, I want to bring you into the conversation. I understand the Muslim community in Northern Maine is also adapting in some ways. Tell me, how does this pandemic and especially the social distancing affect the way you practice your faith?
Well, the interesting thing about Islam is for us, we have prayers every day. We have five mandatory prayers every day that we do, most of the time, do individually as a family. So in some ways, we're able to continue to practice our faith pretty well because we pray five times a day, different times throughout the day, 7 days a week, and we continue to pray our 35 prayers a week without interruption. The biggest problem for us is that we have a congregational prayer that we do on Fridays around noonish or 1 o'clock at the mosque. Obviously, like all the other faiths, we're unable to have congregational prayers. So that has been interrupted. But overall, 97% of our prayers we do individually or as a family. So it hasn't really interrupted that as much. One of the things about the prayers is always to help us remember and praise God. And because of that, this is a time that we have to remember, praise, and thank God for everything we have and ask Him to protect us during this COVID-19.
Will this affect how you will this affect Ramadan?
No, absolutely. Ramadan is a time where we actually have a lot more congregational prayers. And we try to meet every night almost for the 30 days of Ramadan, where we pray the night prayer. And then after the night prayer, we have something called Tarawih prayer. And Tarawih prayer is extra prayers during this time of Ramadan. Ramadan is a month of fasting where we don't eat or drink between the dawn and sunset. It's a time of remembrance of God. And it's a time where we submit ourselves and keep ourselves from the physical needs that we have of just water and food, and start to really become more spiritually in touch with God, and really try to do more prayers, more thanking God. And also the other interesting thing about Ramadan is the fact that during that time when you don't eat or drink between dawn and sunset, it doesn't matter whether you have access to food or drink, or whether you're the richest person in the world or the poorest person in the world. Everybody's is required to do this and submits to God in this way. And by doing this, it shows us a quality of life and a quality of humanity, and to really ask us to reflect on what we have and be thankful for what we have, and also to do more charity during this time of fasting.
Hmm. Joining us on the line now is Carol Conley, Executive Director of the Christian Civic League. Thanks so much for calling in, Carol.
Hi, Jennifer. It's good to be here. Appreciate it.
Tell me how you celebrated Palm Sunday.
Well, for full disclosure, Jennifer, my mother-in-law is not well. And so my wife and I, Saturday, drove straight through down to Alabama.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
You just interrupted some of the best ribs I've ever had for this interview. But on Sunday, we actually gathered with her parents, and her dad is a retired pastor. And so we listened to a sermon online, and then we took communion together and prayed and reflected on the Lord's triumphal entry into Jerusalem. So that's how we celebrated as a family.
Governor Mills told me that you had been talking with her and working with her really early on as this crisis was unfolding. How have you and the other pastors in your network been responding to this new reality of pandemic?
Well, just like everybody else, there are frustrations and disappointments. And just as, you know, your previous speaker just talked about alterations and changes that we've made in, you know, traditional ways of celebrating this time of year. But I have been incredibly impressed with how nimble and how creative churches and pastors have been, especially in embracing technology. And one of the things that we've done in communicating with the governor's office is to make sure those pastors that are wanting to be compliant, and even as the emergency orders have been more restrictive, and understandably and rightly so, for us to be able to communicate to the churches, you know, how can we still even do the streaming and be not just the letter of the law, but the spirit of law, to do that as safely as possible, but yet still have those shepherds keeping in touch with their flocks and at the same time being assets to their communities and helping police and other municipal forces to help with food delivery and, you know, those type of things through this time.
We've all read about some churches in other states pushing back against the social distancing guidelines and continuing to gather, even fighting back against government orders. What is your thinking on this, and is this happening in Maine?
Really not seeing it in Maine, and that's, of course, one of the reasons why we reached out to the governor. And, you know, I think biblical Christianity recognizes in Romans 13 and 1 Peter chapter 2 that government is good. It's ordained by God, and it's there to help protect us. And while there may be times we might not agree with someone politically, it doesn't change the role of this particular issue of government, with a very compelling interest as public health. And as we look at this pandemic, so the vast majority of my communications with pastors and even other ministries like Christian schools and things like that have just said, how can we comply? You know, the government is trying to do a good thing. We still want to stay connected and be a help to our congregants and our community. But as we have communicated, and I would say, Jennifer, the governor's office has been fantastic. They've been very detailed. They've listened. Sometimes they put an ordinance out, and we've asked, well, could we do it this way and still be safe? And they've been very much in a listening mode and recognizing that our desire is, you know, how can we I wouldn't call them competing interests, but, you know, the interest of still wanting to practice our Christianity and pastors, you know, stay in touch, but at the same time, recognizing this as a serious threat. And so how do we navigate it together?
Well, thank you so much for calling in and joining us. That is Carol Conley, Executive Director of the Christian Civic League. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you, Jennifer.
I want to ask Rabbi Yu and Reverend Lodewyk, have you had any, as we're talking about what we've read about happening in other states where congregations really want to continue to gather, have you all had pressure to continue to gather despite the social distancing guidelines and rules?
We've heard people express a sense of loss, but nobody has pushed me or our synagogue board to continue with in-person worship. In Judaism, pikuach nefesh, the preservation of life, is the highest value. Everybody understands that. And I'm really grateful. There are Jewish communities in the U.S., in Israel, and other parts of the world that really tried to push off social distancing guidelines with, unfortunately, really negative effects. So I'm really thankful that the congregation understands the situation, that they are affirming our core values, and are willing to go online with us regardless of age or previous background.
And Reverend?
Yes. I, too, would agree that I've gotten a lot of support from my parishioners and from our church council for suspending in-person worship. I've encountered nothing but support for that and a lot of patience as we've learned how to do this, and we are learning how to do this. Our learning curves are tremendous at this point in time. Personally, the congregations that are still meeting don't necessarily represent the versions of Christianity or Christian theology with which I'm most familiar, so I would hesitate to speak for them or try to explain the reasoning behind their behavior. But I would say that from my own location, what I would say is that the ecumenical movement, mainline Christianity, basically respects everyone in our, not only in our congregations, but the surrounding communities. So that includes religious people, it includes non-religious people alike, and we take science seriously and we value all lives as precious and worthy of respectful protection from exposure to a deadly, dreadful virus. So
we're talking about the faith, Maine's faith community in the face of coronavirus. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hear from Catholic Bishop Robert Dealey and take your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for Efficiency Maine Energy Audit and Insulation Rebates. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
For Jewish families, Passover isn't just a holiday with a meal. It's a ritual where people gather around the table. This year, social distancing is preventing families from gathering for the traditional Seder.
It's hard not to get to be with family. It's hard not to be able to support my parents in what's a hard time for them. And it's hard not to get to be together for celebrations.
More this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And All Things Considered is today between 4 and 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. The Maine Center for Disease Control holds a daily weekday update and briefing on the coronavirus. You can watch it in its entirety on Maine Public Television, on our website, mainepublic.org, and also on the Maine Public Facebook page. Now, today, it is scheduled to start later than usual at 2 o'clock this afternoon, and Governor Mills is scheduled to attend. Again, today's daily briefing on the coronavirus from the Maine CDC with Dr. Shaw and Governor Mills will be carried on Maine Public Television, mainepublic.org, the Maine Public Facebook page, and also here on Maine Public Radio. It will also be archived each day for later viewing. Please visit mainepublic.org and click on the television dropdown.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, how faith communities in Maine are adapting to the coronavirus crisis and the role of religion during this time of uncertainty. My guests are Reverend Alyssa Lodewyk, who is pastor for Woodford's Congregational Church and also president of the Maine Council of Churches, Dr. Hassan Abolish, a physician in Holton and a board member of the Islamic Center of Maine in Orono, and Rabbi Rachel Isaacs, executive director of the Center for Small Town Jewish Life. She also teaches at Colby College. Calling in now is the Most Reverend Robert Dealey. He is Bishop of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Portland. Thanks so much for joining us, Bishop.
You're welcome, Jennifer. It's good to be with you.
I saw an image of you during Palm Sunday leading the service to leading Mass to empty pews. What are your plans for the rest of Holy Week?
We will be doing the same thing. We will observe the social distancing, and the need is there to have these ritual celebrations, which are so important to us and in our faith. And so, the numbers of people who are joining us show that this is a very important time of year, and these are very important celebrations. And we're grateful for the wonders of technology that make this possible. I can't imagine what happened 100 years ago during the last great pandemic, and how people were able to maneuver through that since they lacked this technology. But it's been a wonderful boon to have this technology, both to share worship with people and to have meetings and carry on the conversations we need to have to keep things going.
And I'm on the website right now, and I see a list of, for example, Holy Thursday Masses, daily Masses during the Holy Week that'll be streamed. Are the Catholic churches in Maine completely closed, or are they? Do they have some open hours where people can come in individually and pray?
I think that depends upon the place and the availability, but for the most part, they're closed because it's very hard to once you open them and people go in, then they have to be cleaned if somebody is in there. So and you just don't know who's there and so on. So I think for safety purposes, because all of these decisions are made for the good health and the well-being of the people we serve, and doing what we're doing, as hard as it is and as difficult as it is to do, and is on, we're a community where we gather as a community, and so it's hard, very hard, not to do that. It's constitutive of what we believe and how we live and how we worship, but not doing it, I take as an act of charity, because it protects the lives of those who are not there and who are who therefore are not going to be infected by this terrible virus.
What's happening with the individual pastoral duties of priests? For example, visiting people who are dying, is that not happening now?
It is, according to the protocols that are available to them. Our hospital chaplains are continuing to do their work. Our pastors are continuing to do their visiting insofar as they can. There's a lot of places in which all of our nursing homes and things like that in the state are pretty much sealed off at this point for safety reasons. But where it's possible, the sacraments are being brought to the sick and the dying. Those things are continuing with the proper precautions being taken. But the major work of our pastors now is to continue to keep with our people, and that's being done on social media and on the telephone. The pastors are calling their people, having a chance to chat with them. People are very lonely. They're at home. They're fearful. They're needing to have somebody reach out to them, and that's what our pastors and pastoral staffs throughout the diocese are doing in these days.
Have hospital chaplains administered to people with COVID-19 in Maine?
I don't have an answer to that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I presume that they have, because there are people with coronavirus in Maine, and our chaplains are involved in the work of the hospitals. So I can only presume that that is in fact the case.
Before we say goodbye to you, any thoughts you'd like to share with those listening right now?
Well, I think that I wrote to the priest today and told them that because today would normally be an annual gathering that we would have for all the priests in the diocese and representations from every parish for a special mass to bless the oils. And in that letter, I reminded them that we can't tell the future. We only know that God is with us. And so it's very hard to start to look at questions for what's going to happen a month from now. Let's trust that God is with us, and let's go on supporting each other in this time and wait, and the solutions will become clear as to what we do next. But if we worry too much about what's going to happen 6 weeks from now, we worry ourselves unnecessarily. We need to wait and see and trust and move forward.
Well, thank you so much for joining our conversation today. That was Bishop Dealey with the Roman Catholic Diocese based in Portland. We're going to go to Peter, who's calling from Buxton. Hi, Peter. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Oh, greetings. And, you know, this is a wonderful day. I'm sitting on the tailgate of my car after doing a bunch of shopping, and I've got my mask and my gloves off, and I'm really relaxed and happy to be here. I'm calling because I see a great dissonance between knowing spirit and engaging religion. I think religion is absolutely crucial in creating community. And by community, I mean no one gets left behind. And so the poor in spirit can be a very important part of religion. But the major function of religion is to put every individual in touch with the all-pervasive spirit. And by spirit, each individual is able to experience spirit by going to that little place inside them to which they cannot lie. You cannot fool yourself. You cannot pretend. So that's where my life is. It is focused around spirit rather than religion. I have good community around me. I have people who understand my perspective. But at this point, when people are poor in spirit, fearful, and feeling lost and unsupported, finding that place where you can go inside and learn and experience that you're doing your best, and that's the best that can be done.
Peter, thank you for calling in and sharing your thoughts today. Rabbi, do you have any thoughts?
I think it's really beautiful that that still, quiet voice within each of us is really important to access in order to be resilient in this moment. And one of the things that I think that religious community and education does is give us the skills and the language to connect to that still, small voice, right? The songs, the rituals, the knowing that you're not alone because there's this community that will always be with you, all of these elements, you know, they can be ritualistic, or if you really understand the underlying purpose and they are integrated thoughtfully into your life, it's really a way in which to connect to that place within us. And the one other thing that I'd say, and this is especially true in the Jewish community, is that many of our prayers are in the plural. Very few of them are in the individual Hebrew. And it's because we see ourselves as part of a larger people and a larger narrative that inculcates a sense of communal responsibility and communal ethics. And I think at this moment in particular, many of us, I hope, are seeing the importance of seeing beyond the boundaries of our individual lives and our individual journeys, the extent to which we're interconnected and the responsibilities that we have to sustain one another physically and spiritually. Without that knowledge and that action based on the interconnectedness, not only of all humanity, but of all being, I think that we're lost. And the point of religious community, and I think part of the reason we're seeing an upsurge and the number of people engaging in religious life, which we've certainly seen. We had, you know, 300 people joining in a statewide Shabbat service. We had 300 people logging in, so we probably had close to 500 people with us for a statewide Shabbat, which is probably the biggest group we've had of Jews praying together, maybe ever in Maine, or the only thing that could probably compete with that is the High Holidays in Portland and Bangor, right? People are really tuning in, and they really want to feel that sense of community and transcendence, and there's an affirmation of the extent to which acknowledging the interconnectedness and communal responsibility is really essential at this moment.
Peter, thank you for your call. We're going to move to Kim, who's calling from Cumberland. Hi, Kim. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having me. So I'm the Children's Ministry Director at White Pine Community Church. And so we've been working very hard to create not only a Sunday morning experience that everyone can feel as much like they're a part of the church morning, the Sunday morning as possible, and then also almost even more importantly than that is how we can reach out to our community and be a resource for them. So it's we've had a lot of pretty amazing opportunities in the last couple weeks.
You know, Reverend Lodewick, what are you hearing from the other churches that you've been talking with?
Well, I think a lot of us are learning a really important lesson, which is that a church is not actually a building. Church is the community and the members within that community. So church is people. And a lot of congregations that I know of are developing new ways to bring people together that aren't building dependent. So one of the historical critiques of some churches is that they've been too internally focused. They care so much about their own folks within the building, within the congregation, that they haven't spent as much time or energy reaching outside those church doors and seeing how they can serve the communities and minister to the communities in which they're located. And this situation is definitely changing that. Churches are looking to serve the communities in which they are located, in which they're situated, and they're looking to be part of that the community that's going through this collective trauma together and bring special resources that faith communities can bring into this traumatic situation in which we all find ourselves. So churches out there are going out and do, like a lot of prior callers and prior folks have said, churches are going out and trying to get involved in the community. They're sending their members out to help do social justice work and do work with organizations that are serving the most vulnerable among us. So it's really a good wake-up call that the church isn't a building. It's about the people in the community, in the building, getting out there into the world and helping folks, not with any expectation that they'll ever darken the doors of your church or that they'll give a donation or that they'll come to believe what you believe, but you're just serving them because it's the right thing to do and it gives you an opportunity to serve as God's hands and feet in the world.
Dr. Abulesh, talk to me about the role of community during this pandemic for those of you who are Islamic and are living in places where your church is not, your mosque is not the biggest place of worship in that community. How does one serve a community when there are only a few people?
Yeah, so living in Houlton, obviously there isn't a mosque here. And for me, Islam is a life. And what we do in life is worshiping God. And so for me, my calling of being a physician has exemplifies me being a Muslim and the fact that everything I do in trying to help my patients and help my community, whether it be helping the sick or helping the poor, or whether it's just talking to somebody, whether it's smiling supermarket is a way of praising and worshiping God for us. In terms of the earlier discussion, one of the things that I do want to comment on is the fact that we are nationally are not having our mandatory Friday prayers, and the mosques are closed as the other religious buildings are being closed. The thing for us is that we still are using technology also to try to maintain a community. And being far away, actually the Zoom and having the mosque closed has actually opened up different ways to talk to each other, to educate each other, and to meet with each other. So that's been really helpful. So that's one thing. The other thing that you mentioned is just because we are so isolated up in Houlton, we often think of our house as our mosque because we can pray to God directly here, and we pray as a family together. And that gives us a sense of peace and serenity and tranquility in those hard times.
Tim, how are you helping people in the community?
Yeah, Yeah. So, you know, first of all, we wanted to make sure that that Sunday morning service is available to anybody. It's not like you had to have a password or something, so that people who maybe don't normally step into a church but are curious or want that encouragement and that inspiration at this time, they can watch it at any time. They can watch it with us or any time during the week. So there's that. But otherwise, we're a church that has a lot of attendees from different communities in the area, the Northern Portland area. And so we've designated a point person from each town who is in regular contact with the town leaders. And that way, when something comes up, the town leader knows exactly who from our church to contact. And so we've been able to do that. And as far as the kids, we have a challenge out to them. We created like a bingo game, and their challenge right now, which they don't even think of it as a challenge, they're excited about it, is to create cards for nursing home residents. So we'll be safely delivering those at the end of the week, so they'll have them for Easter. And yeah, just anything else that comes up, we just want to be right there. We want people to know that they can come to us at any time with any need.
Kim, thank you so much for calling in. And we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Maine Turnpike Authority, reminding travelers to watch for the signs, lights, safety cones, and orange barrels that say caution work zone. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On April 7th, 2018, the world's largest ice carousel at the time was created on Long Lake in Sinclair. It measured 427 feet in diameter. The previous record holder was an ice carousel in Lohja, Finland. Volunteers used augers to bore more than 1,300 holes, along with chainsaws and other equipment, to cut the massive hole in lake ice that was 30 inches thick. The record was later broken in Little Falls, Minnesota, when an ice carousel 506 feet across was created.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Marshall Communications. Happy birthday, Maine! The Maine Centers for Disease Control holds a daily briefing on the coronavirus for the citizens of Maine. We'll carry it here on Maine Public Radio, but you can also watch it in its entirety on Maine Public Television, on our website, mainepublic.org, and also on the Maine Public Facebook page. Today's briefing is scheduled later than usual at 2 o'clock this afternoon, and Governor Mills is scheduled to attend. Again, today's daily briefing on the coronavirus from the Maine CDC with Dr. Shaw and Governor Mills is scheduled for 2 o'clock this afternoon. It will also be archived for on-demand viewing at mainepublic.org. Just click on the television drop-down.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We're talking with faith leaders today about how religious communities are adapting in this time of crisis. Joining me, Dr. Hassan Abolesh with the Islamic Center of Maine, Rabbi Rachel Isaacs with Colby College, and Reverend Alyssa Lodwick with Woodford's Congregational Church and the Maine Council of Churches. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us now is the Right Reverend Thomas Brown, who is Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese in Maine. Thanks so much for calling in, Bishop.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's great to be with you.
How difficult has it been to change gears during Holy Week, trying to share the good news at the same time protecting public health?
Well, as everybody, I think, is saying, there's a common thread and a common sense of good news, which is that all of us are in this together. And shifting gears means that what we're really doing is responding to God's mission right now, which is to slow the spread of this virus. And so, yes, we're shifting gears, but we're doing that with a sense of resolve and a sense that we are doing this with everybody.
Have you found there are certain messages in your faith that are resonating with people who may be anxious about this pandemic?
Absolutely. There is tremendous grief and loss, of course, for all of us. And yet the fact remains that it is always God's nature to bring us out of death into life. And so the fact that we're having this conversation today as Holy Week starts is a great reminder. And I'm mindful that this is a beautifully interfaith conversation today, and it seems to me that that fundamental truth about God's nature seems to run throughout all of us.
Well, Bishop, thank you so much for calling in. That was Bishop Thomas Brown of the Episcopal Diocese of Maine. And before I say goodbye, Bishop, I assume you're doing what many of the other leaders we've been talking to are, streaming your services online, bringing people together with the help of technology.
We are indeed, and we're joining the National Council of Churches, who just announced about an hour ago that Christians are invited to ring their church bells on Easter Day at noon in whatever time zone we are in. So we will be joining together with people of all faiths, but especially Christians, this coming Sunday at noon, ringing our church bells.
Well, thank you. Bishop Thomas Brown of the Episcopal Diocese of Maine. I want to return to one of the things that the bishop brought up, this idea of grief and loss. We touched on it in the beginning. Reverend Lodewyk, does that change the way you are thinking about, for example, your sermons moving forward?
It does. In part because there's a need to both acknowledge the grief, the loss, the fear, and the anxiety, and also try to provide a message that those things are all very real, and having those emotions is nothing to be ashamed of. It's totally natural, and there's something beyond all of those experiences. So in my sermons, I'm trying to both acknowledge what's happening, the trauma that we are all collectively experiencing, but then also encourage folks to recognize and remember that this is not all there is. And I think all of our faith traditions, everyone on the panel, other faith traditions as well, in Scripture have so many stories of people going through collective and individual trauma and emerging on the other side. And so while all of this might feel new to us, it's not actually new to humanity. And so that element of hope, that people have gone through this before and it's been painful, but they've emerged on the other side, that's one thing I'm definitely trying to focus on with my folks and in my sermons and with the wider community.
Dr. Abolesh, do you have thoughts about how the grief and loss that people are feeling changes the worship during this pandemic period?
Yes, I tend to agree with the Reverend. We also are thinking of asking God on a daily basis to help protect us, to help protect humanity, to help us conquer this disease. We ask our loving and caring God to help us get through this and to help the whole humanity. I mean, it's one thing we do on a daily basis. We ask for forgiveness and we ask for help and we ask for him to take care of us and so on and so forth. So it's throughout the religion, but personally, it's a daily thing we do on five times a day. And we try to, and one of the things that one of the beliefs we have in Islam, it's the decree of God, and we believe that it's God's will, and we try to understand as much as we can. He's a very just God, and loving and caring, and we try to get peace from that. You know, and the interesting thing about Islam is Islam. The word Islam means submission to God to obtain peace in this world. And as the gentleman was talking about this inner voice in his heart, we believe that our souls and our heart and the peace that comes to our soul through talking to God and asking for love and care and submission.
And Rabbi Isaacs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really crucial to acknowledge the grief and the fear and the anxiety. Jewish history, you know, we have in the Exodus narrative that we're celebrating tomorrow night, this narrative of going from a place of oppression and fear and being brought through to a place of openness and grace and freedom. So we have those narratives, but we also have the blessing and sometimes the challenge of Jewish history, because this time, certainly issues around confinement and scarcity can trigger a lot of intergenerational trauma among the Jewish community for those who are descendants of Holocaust survivors in particular. But also, we can look back at our history, much of it recent, of the Holocaust, of pogroms, of exile, of ghettos, of all of those things that our ancestors have gone through, that we are the descendants of survivors, and we've survived through a lot, and a lot worse than this. May it get no worse. And so it's important to, on one hand, be sensitive to the trauma that we've inherited, but also to look at a narrative not only from the Bible and the Talmud, but to look at a narrative of 2,000 years of survival and resilience and know that we have the stuff within us and within our tradition to persevere.
We'll go to Shelby, who's calling from Old Orchard Beach. Hi, Shelby. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm calling from kind of a unique perspective. I'm actually a member of a non-theistic religion that's like really deeply stigmatized. So it's more, and there's not a lot. So we're used to communicating via social media, podcast, Discord. And I think it's really cool to see other religions finding this and being able to reach maybe more people through it. One of the reasons I like this non-theistic religion is instead of being an atheist like I have been in the past, you know, I've always really recognized the importance of religion in community and in individuals. So I live in a community with mostly older folks who are Christian, and I've actually been really trying to help out because I see how important this is for everyone. And I think it's important for, you know, people who are secular or non-theistic to, you know, realize that this is about community and to just be able to extend and help in whatever way you can.
Well, Shelby, thanks so much for calling and adding your perspective. And I'll throw that out to our guests, this idea that, you know, this may, one of the silver linings is that this is making many of us reach out in ways that we haven't been comfortable before, whether it's using technology or whether it's reaching out to people we don't know very well. Are you experiencing this in your faith communities? I'll start with you, Reverend Lodwick.
We are, and one of the benefits, I was going to mention this earlier, but it's funny, we talk about the importance of technology, and that is important. But one thing that a lot of churches are also doing is bringing back old technologies that had kind of fallen by the wayside, like the old-fashioned phone tree or letter writing to keep in contact with folks. And so people are doing both those old-fashioned technologies, and then we're also having these new technologies that are allowing people to join in our worship services, in our fellowship events. They're allowing folks to join with us who might not have the capacity to physically attend church, or they might have had an experience where entering a church building could be traumatic for them, and so they would never set foot inside a brick-and-mortar church, but providing fellowship online is something that they might feel more comfortable with. So it's definitely, the situation is causing us to expand and be creative and just broaden the ways in which we attempt to help people connect with one another and the divine.
Dr. Abolish.
Yeah, I think that's very important, but I also feel that it's also important to continue to maintain humanity and to continue to maintain the human aspect of life itself. And as we get technology that becomes more and more embedded in our daily life, I worry a little bit about that, even as a physician, but also religiously. And I feel that hopefully once this is over, and when it is over, that we can come back together and we'll have more groves of people going to their religious buildings and being together and spending more time together and helping each other out. I mean, I think it's so important not only to help each other out as a religious group, but as a human group, and as we try to spread, you know, this peace and camaraderie, and allow us to really take care of each other. And that's one thing we try to do even at the mosque in Orono. We try to reach out and help everybody, no matter what denomination, and just open the doors. And I think that's the one thing you asked me at the beginning about what's going to interfere during Ramadan, it's the breaking of fast and having that community come together and opening it to the whole community of Orno and whoever wants to come to join us during the breaking of fast, because that's a really important, joyous time to spend together and share ideas.
All right. Rabbi Isaacs.
I agree that there's some things that can't be replaced by technology. I think particularly about Shiva, a mourning ritual after death. It's actually Jewish law that you're not supposed to speak to a mourner until they try to start a conversation with you or they choose to. And you just bring food and are physically present. So I think there are times where it's just important to be there and to feed, which we are very invested in, and not necessarily to talk. But I will say that as the result of COVID-19, I'm engaging with more people, teaching more Torah probably than I have in years, doing nightly check-ins with my congregations to say the nightly Shema, teaching online, and inviting my colleagues from around the state to teach 10 minutes of Torah through the Center for Small Town Jewish Life. So there's more Torah and more connection in one sense, and I'm also feeling still that sense of loss and knowing more acutely and more strongly now how important physical presence can and will be.
All right. We have an email here from AM. I hated leaving my former church in Exeter, New Hampshire, First Unitarian, but I've always stayed connected with their weekly newsletter. Thank goodness. They did a service on Zoom this past weekend. Being known as the Church of the Good Cry, I dutifully reacted to see my former minister, fellow congregants, and communing together in support. Our unison benediction was particularly timely. Go in peace, speak truth, give thanks each day, be kind to the earth and all of the creatures, for they are alive like you. Care for your body, it is a wondrous gift. Be gentle on yourself, live simply, be of service, be guided by your faith and not your fear. Go lightly on your way, walk in a sacred manner. Well, thank you for that email, AM. We have just a tiny bit of time left. Jim, in Eastport, if you could be quick, that would be great.
Jen, I will be quick. Thank you very much. Over the many years I've lived, I found out that once the trends and the fads are gone, that faith is golden. It is my anchor and foundation to deal with what comes along. Otherwise, without faith, it's like an astronaut out there without a tether rope. There's no there. And it's funny, all things change. The only thing that stays the same is God. And I do not think it's a coincidence that 9/11 week and Pearl Harbor week is also the holiest week of the year. And anyone who's lived and did the right thing, accepted, forgave,
Jim,
and loved, it brings peace. I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for ending with that nice call. And thank you to our guests today, Rabbi Rachel Isaacs, Executive Director of the Center for Small Town Jewish Life, who also teaches at Colby College, Reverend Alyssa Lodwick, who is pastor for Woodford's Congregational Church in Portland and president of the Maine Council of Churches, and Dr. Hassan Abolesh, a physician based in Orono who is on the board of the Islamic Center of Maine in Orono. Stay with Maine Public right after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock, the daily briefing with Maine CDC Director Dr. Nirav Shah, as well as Governor Janet Mills. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Public Radio.